And so today we continue our series on the creative process based on the first book, the first creation story in Genesis. And for those of you who haven't been with us, we'll do a quick review. And for those of you who've been here from the beginning, before we're finished, you're going to have this memorized, right? And it's a good thing to have it memorized. So, day one, God said, "Let there be light." And there was this sudden burst of spiritual energy in the universe. And from that, we get step one, which is the idea of spiritual awareness, illumination, always knowing that God's light shines around us and within us. And then on day two, God said, "Let there be a firmament to divide the waters." And metaphysically, that firmament represents faith, faith in our infinite possibilities to manifest the invisible into the visible. And then on day three, we worked with last week, let the waters be gathered together in one place and let the dry land appear. And that represents the power of imagination. And many of you, I know, worked with imagination this week because some of you shared your success stories. And I'm glad that you were able to put that into practice because that power of imagination is really, really powerful. And the more we work with it, the better we become at imagining what it is we want in this particular life. So now we are ready for day four. And this is Genesis 1, 14 through 19. Now, right away, you're going to see something about this day, and that is, it is longer and more detailed than the ones that have preceded it. So I hope you can see the slide. If not, I'll try to read it slowly so you can take it in. And God said, "Let there be lights in the firmament of heaven." Now, the alternate language is, "Let there be lights in the dome of the sky, to separate the day from the night, and let them be for signs and for seasons and for days and years. And let them be lights in the dome of the sky to give light upon the earth." And it was so. And God made the two great lights, the greater light to rule the day and the lesser light to rule the night, and the stars. God set them in the dome of the sky to give light upon the earth, to rule over the day and over the night, and to separate the light from the darkness. And God saw that it was good. And there was evening and there was morning, the fourth day. And so our two patterns continue that we talked about in days one through three. God creates through the power of the word, "Let there be," and calls all creation good. And the sun that we were missing on day three, remember we talked about the plants appearing before the sun? The sun that we were missing on day three now appears on day four. And did you notice that the text talks about a greater light and a lesser light, but doesn't ever use the word sun and moon? Anybody think that was a little bit unusual? Well, it's believed that the actual words sun and moon were deliberately avoided because those heavenly bodies already had proper names for gods in the surrounding non-Israelite pagan cultures. In Egypt, for example, they worship, I'm sure you've all heard of the sun god Ra. There he is, depicted with the head of a hawk and a golden orb of the sun above. And in Asia, where the people traveled at night in the desert to avoid the heat of the sun, the moon was a force to be reckoned with and worshipped. Throughout the Mediterranean, winter and summer solstices are associated with worship rituals because they represented the withdrawal and coming again of light. Now, also eclipses of the sun struck primitive man with terror. And looking at the moon in some phases, it was considered extremely menacing. So the people were very much affected by the light of the sun and the moon. And in telling the story of the fourth day of creation, the ancient Hebrews transformed the polytheistic theology of the day, where everybody was worshiping all these different gods. They transformed that and said that the sun, the moon, and the stars are not powers to be feared, but instead they are light givers to be appreciated because the one true God created them. And the Interpreter's Bible says, in an age where there was no such thing as a telescope, the sun and the moon seemed to dominate the sky. Yet the early Hebrews looked up at the innumerable lights that glittered in the heavens and included, almost as an afterthought, the text says, and also, that God made the stars. They could not possibly have guessed, not possibly, what seemed to be those twinkling pinpoints against the darkness were actually planets and constellations. But the wings of their faith extended to what they thought was the fullness of the universe. And they must have felt a sense of tremendous awe as they looked up into the night sky before the majesty and mystery of God. All that was in the sky belonged to God, and God called all of it good. And what does this fourth day add to the blueprint of the creative process in our lives? Well, Charles Fillmore explains that the firmament, or the dome, that is actually representation of the consciousness of truth established in us. Remember, the dome is a symbol of our faith building power. And this consciousness of truth divides the illumined day, representing spiritual understanding, from the unillumined night consciousness, representing ignorance of spiritual truth. Fillmore says night represents a lack of understanding where our thoughts work long and hard, with little gain. Okay, how many of us have been there? Right? I mean, we all have. We've all been there. We understand that. And so the greater light, the sun, symbolizes the awakening of the power of spiritual understanding. And the lesser light, the moon, represents the power of will. And the stars, the signs, the seasons, all the other details in the text today, the years symbolize different stages of our own spiritual unfoldment as we work toward understanding. Butterworth says, and this is how it hooks to imagination, Butterworth says, being receptive to our flow of imagination is like basking in the sun. And when we remain open, the understanding will come, the knowledge by which our imaginings can actually be achieved. Noticed, when we remain open. So let's take a closer look first at that power of understanding. In a book that several of us studied a few years ago, How to Use Your 12 Gifts from God, William Wark writes, understanding is the ability to know that God stands under all things. Wark makes a point especially important for those of us who are using the creative process to try to solve a problem in our lives. He says, when you meet something you don't understand, it means you can't see the good, the order, the purpose in it. In other words, we can't see how God stands under it sometimes, but God is there nonetheless. We had a chaplain several years ago who always said, remember, God is in the muck. And we know that God doesn't cause the muck, but where we are, Spirit is there also. Even when we can't understand the details, even when we go to that human reaction, why is this happening to me? And let's be honest, we all go there. We can still find that peace of mind and heart by knowing that there is a spiritual law in effect despite the temporary appearances. Divine understanding is our knowing that God as principle stands under all things, and therefore within all things, somehow, some way, there is some good. Now Thomas is our disciple who represents understanding, and you'll all remember that he was the one who would not believe in the resurrection until he could look at the wounds in Jesus' hand. Remember, we did the story of Thomas right after Easter. And Jesus says to Thomas, you believe because you have seen, but blessed are those who have not seen and still believe. So spiritual understanding is not revealed through our eyesight, our senses, or our precious intellect. When we're facing a problem, we do research, we gather facts and opinions, we you know, outuse Google. And all of these together do not give us true spiritual understanding. Spiritual understanding is a revelation of truth, and it comes from only one place, and that is our heart center, our Christ center. In Jeremiah 31:33, we read, "I will put my law within them, and I will write it upon their hearts, and I will be their God, and they will be my people." Emily Cady in Lessons in Truth wrote, "Until deep down in the depths of your being, you are conscious of your oneness with the Father, until you know within yourself that the spring of all wisdom and health and joy is within your own being, ready at any moment to leap forth, at the call of your need, you will not have spiritual understanding." Understanding, or that realization that the presence of God is within, is, as Jesus said, the gift of God. So we might think of God as the giver, but actually God is the gift. And sometimes it's our human needs that turn us to God and help us to receive that gift. So spiritual understanding is living in that awareness of our internal Son, our Christ center. And with that understanding of the sun comes the light of the moon, representing the will. The will is just a reflection of understanding, just as the moon is just a reflection of the sun. Will is what gives us that motivation to go forward. It is our executive power. It's our ability to choose, decide, lead, and determine. And we're all familiar with the phrase, where there's a will, there's a... But here's the thing, which way? Which way? Because, like all of our spiritual powers, will can be used to reflect our human consciousness, or it can be used to reflect our spiritual identity. In human consciousness, will often manifests as willpower. And that can be a good thing when it's directed to our life's goals. None of us would be sitting here today, none of you would be sitting here today if you had not had the willpower to listen to that alarm and get up this morning, right? That, I mean, it is the impetus for getting us going. And Thomas Edison was once asked, by an interviewer, what would you have done if you had not finally found the secret of the incandescent lamp? And Edison tartly replied, "Well, I know one thing for sure. I would be in my laboratory right this minute instead of where I am right now, wasting my time talking to you." Okay? Willpower can be that driving force that gives us focus and persistence. So it's really a good thing. And yet, sometimes we can get so focused on our outer goals, our material goods, maybe personal prestige, that we are kind of like the two-year-old. Bob and I have a two-year-old grandson, so we know this personally. Kind of like that two-year-old who has that approach of a do it own self. It takes 5 minutes to get him in his car seat because he has to do the buckle. You know, it's a lot easier for us to do it, but it's do it own self. Some of you get that. I see people shaking their heads about that. And so what happens in that do it own self mentality is that we stubbornly cling to the ideas that we think are best instead of becoming receptive to spiritual insight. And people who exercise their power of will strictly from human consciousness become willful, demanding their way all the time. Again, kind of like a two-year-old. I'm sure we all have had to deal with people who exhibit this behavior. Certainly no one in this room, but people we might know from the outside might, you know? And here is the behavior. "My mind is made up. Don't confuse me with the facts." Right? Or it's those people who have the my way or the highway attitude, right? They are narcissistic, domineering, selfish, stubborn, and rigid. They badger, harass, and persecute. Does anybody know anybody like that? I mean, you know, we do if we're honest. And none of those traits are what we want in our best friends, and none of those traits reflect the people's true Christ identity. But when we align our will with spiritual understanding, we let go of that personal will, and we become more willing toward God. There's a huge difference between will and willingness. It has been said the highest use of willpower is to use it to direct our attention toward the higher mind or God mind. In the mystery of Genesis, Fillmore explains, the will does not reason, doesn't have a reasoning power, just as the moon does not really shine. But in its harmonious relation, acts easily and naturally upon the inspiration of spirit. Divine will expresses the I am in humankind. Now, Jesus taught us to pray, thy will be done, thy will be done, okay? Give you the right cue, you give me the right answer, right? Okay? Works beautifully that way. And as we work through the creative process, we need to re-examine the term God's will. Now, I know in Unity we often repeat, God's will for us is, okay, now I'm giving the right cue. God's will for us is ever unfolding good. We do say that a lot, don't we? We really do. But here's the question. Do we really and truly believe it? Think about what's going on in your life right now, something that you might be trying to manifest. And whatever is happening, you have to believe and know for yourself, God's will for me is good. God desires for me health, love, companionship, prosperity, financial stability, peace of mind, and peace in the world. Am I willing to accept all of these? We know too many people who use that term, God's will, to describe disease, disasters, devastations, and death. Let's explore a scenario for just a moment, based on someone I actually know. A young mother receives a disturbing diagnosis of a rare aggressive cancer, and her immediate reaction is, I am devastated. I am worried about my husband and children, but I know it's God's will. Now, if she really believes this, then she must think that God has some perverse, punitive need for her to suffer and to be singled out for punishment. And if that is what the Almighty thinks of her, she must have done something horrible, horrendous, or actually be something horrible or horrendous to deserve that punishment. That's sad, but now here's the question. What does she do? In that consciousness, what does she do? Is she going to pursue treatment, engage in prayer, make all the decisions necessary for her healing, or is she going to acquiesce to what she thinks is divine will for her, and then be involved in all this worry and guilt about what she's done to bring it on? Because, you know what, if we believe God is against us, what is the point? And God is never against us. God stands under us in all of our good and all of our peace and all of our love. One way or another, we are always using our God-given power of will, always. Even though some of our decisions are based on subconscious motives and error thinking. Will is really our ability to be willing toward God's good and the full expression of our divinity. God's will for us is ever unfolding good, and it's something else also. It is the ceaseless longing of our Creator to express through all He has created. So we are here to be God's expressions on this earth. We are here to exhibit all the qualities of the divine. And Wark says we can only do this through the releasing of some old patterns of being. We must each ask ourselves, what am I willing to release, to believe that I am here to express God? Maybe it's residual anger and unforgiveness toward a person or situation. Maybe it's a subconscious lack of self-worth. For many of us, it is simply that old nemesis fear. fear of change, fear of the unknown, fear that we are worthy, or fear that we might fail. Les Brown said, "Too many of us are not living our dreams because we are living our fears. Fear is a magnet that only draws more fear. Love is a magnet that only draws more love." So when we rely on our spiritual understanding, we turn to the light that dissolves all fears, all darkness. And maybe the most important thing we need to release is our human ego's drive to always be in charge. When Bob and I travel and I get maybe a little aggravated with the way things are organized, Bob will say, "Jan, relax, you're not in charge here," which is true. You know, I'm not. And I should be relaxing and enjoying that fact. You know, I'm not trying to direct it. So maybe when we really take this into our heart, we come to the point where we can say, "Not my will, but thy will," in full understanding of what thy will is. One of the most important spiritual practices that we can ever embrace is the act of letting go and letting God. And letting go does not mean giving up. It means surrendering to a higher power. And oh, how our human wills resist that concept of surrender, don't we? What we have in our minds about that is really, you know, that image of white flag defeat, right? That surrendering is giving up. But in a spiritual sense, surrender is exactly the opposite. It means to align ourselves with the power and presence of the divine. It means to surrender to who and what we truly are. The Jafalos describe spiritual surrender beautifully in The Quest. Some of you will remember this. They write, "Contrary to popular belief, surrender can be a positive decision, a positive act. All of nature surrenders. The caterpillar surrenders and becomes a butterfly. The hawk egg surrenders to its eggness and becomes a hawk. Nothing new can happen until the old loses power. When we surrender, we don't sacrifice anything. We only lose whatever is keeping us the same. And that means we don't lose anything at all. We gain everything. We put ourselves into that perfect divine flow." And the creation story in Genesis, especially in day 4, introduces the art of a prayer that Eric Butterworth says is the prayer that never fails. Some of us work with prayer yesterday afternoon. It's the prayer of surrender, and it's also the prayer of let there be. That is the prayer of surrender. Not, "Oh dear God, please make it be." Not, "Oh dear God, please release this from me." But let there be. Let there be, with no suggestion of stress or strain, no hurry, no anxiety, no willfulness. Just let there be. The kingdom that Jesus said is within us is a finished kingdom. And that for which we pray is done before we ever ask. That's why Jesus says, "Ask and you shall receive, and ask believing that you shall receive, and it will be yours." And when we get the right relationship between will and understanding, the moon reflects the light of the sun and becomes an outlet for our own personal divine flow. So the will becomes the willingness to let there be. And as you continue using the steps of the creative process this week to manifest your dreams and desires, remember, even in the midst of chaos, there is that light. And when we stand firm in that light, knowing that not only does that light surround us and does it indwell us, but that we are the light, we cannot help but standing firm in the faith of infinite possibilities, visualizing what we desire, and then in the deepest kind of trust, we align our will with the spiritual understanding of let there be. Where there's a will, and it is based on spiritual understanding. There is always a way. So let's take a moment now to really take this into our consciousness as we prepare for prayer and meditation to affirm the great truth of our God, that there is only one presence and one power in the universe and at work in our lives, God, the good, omnipotent, and so it is. Together, there is only one presence and one power in the universe and at work in my life, God, the good, omnipotent, and so it is.